Team 33, the football magazine show for the football purists.
Oh, come on, it has! They had one team in the quarterfinals.
Live at 9 p.m. every Friday on OTB Sports Radio. On the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's mow. Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m.
I'm delighted to say now that we're joined on the line by the Liverpool and Ireland legend, Mark Lawrenson. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, guys.
We were just talking a little bit earlier about the passing of, obviously, the great man. You were, I don't believe, on the same page as him at any time, but obviously very much the same vintage and would have watched this guy play a lot of football.
Yeah, I think he played. I think he played at Lansdowne for Argentina in 1980. I'm pretty sure I broke my arm in the April of that year, and obviously I missed out. But I was saying to somebody the other day that I remember Phil Neal coming back from an international friendly, England Argentina. It might even have been that summer, and he was just kind of waxing lyrical about this fellow Maradona. We didn't really know very much about him. He was still a teenager and stuff, and he just said, wow. He said he was absolutely untouchable. You couldn't get anywhere near him. And Gary Lineker always goes on about the hand of God goal that everybody knows about. Excuse me. But he says that he said the pitch that they played on that day, I mean, if you watch it and see the footage, and we've all seen it again in the last couple of days, I mean, the pitch is rough anyway. But Gary Lineker said the turf had been completely relayed and it hadn't set. He said, so if you imagine that every time you ran on it, it actually felt like it moved underneath you. So if you then watch the second goal that he scored, bearing in mind that fact, it's like even better than it actually was, and it was already brilliant.
Yeah, it was an incredible goal when you get that context as well. We've been talking about Peter Shilton's comments. I don't know if you've seen them, and about whether, I mean, I think the timing of them are very poor as well. But I was making the point a bit earlier that maybe Peter Shilton, of all people in England, can feel as if, you know, in terms of building that bridge all these years later, like he can continue to feel aggrieved. Might have chose his timing a little bit better, though.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he's obviously kept it bottled up all those years, and he's decided to let it out. But, you know, I think, listen, Thierry Henry, we could throw at him, couldn't we? So we've done it. I reckon we've got over that now, have we not? But maybe some of us haven't. But, listen, he got away with it. I'm sure there's lots of centre-forward strikers who've scored with their hands over the years. Referee misses it, the referee misses it. So that's just the way that it is. But I think you've got to pick your moments if you're going to obviously go after people.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is probably not the week for us. Let's talk about some of the football to look ahead to, Mark, over the course of the weekend. Liverpool to begin with. And like we've seen, obviously, what happened during the week, and maybe it's difficult to start to read too much into it, but the 9 games in 5 weeks and the squad rotation, obviously, that Klopp was doing at that point. Is it just a case that some of those players have yet to maybe mature into those positions to get up to the speed of that kind of level? Or is there anything deeper in what happened during the week that's given you pause for thought?
No, I think, you know, I have to do these predictions every single week for the BBC, and I was kind of half expecting maybe, you know, a draw against Leicester last weekend, maybe even get beat at Manchester City, only purely and simply because, you know, when you look at certainly the back four who started against Leicester on Sunday, they'd never ever played together, and you kind of thought Jamie Vardy gets a couple of half chances, you know, it could be a problem for Liverpool. So that result for me was the best result of the season for Liverpool so far. So they're going to be highs, and there's going to be one or two lows. The manager knows that, but I don't expect, you know, I mean, obviously you've got Brighton at the weekend. I think with Brighton, they play out from the back. They haven't really got big centre-forwards, big strikers that are going to obviously score goals in the air and put Liverpool under pressure. I think the only problem they'll have will maybe be set pieces, because there is, apart from Matic, there's a lack of height in the back four, but they've just got to get on with it. But I think we're in strange times, as everybody knows, but I think we're in strange times in terms of the Premier League, and I do feel that come next kind of April, and God hope we might have fans back, but you know, I think there'll be 4 or 5 teams with a chance of actually winning the league. But if you look at it, I mean, Liverpool obviously lost at Aston Villa and stuff, and generally they've been good so far. Manchester City can't score a goal at the moment. You know, Tottenham all of a sudden have got very good, and really, as well as they played in terms of the result on Sunday against Man City, it was a bit anti-football, wasn't it? And I just think with Tottenham, if they don't score first against you, then I think they're a completely different team. So I just think that the league's going to be open, and, you know, Liverpool will have their ups and downs. And purely and simply, if you think about the last 2 years, the two seasons they've had, where they've been absolutely brilliant in the league, you know, it's very, very difficult to continue that. So, you know, they'll win loads, and they'll probably lose a few, and such is life, really.
Yeah, and a part of life at the minute. Actually, one of the sort of oddly positive things about the last 8 months has been our capacity to hear what's going on in the pitch at various points. And I know that Klopp during the week was picked up telling the team to just start playing football. One of the other things has been Jordan Henderson, when he was fit before the last number of weeks, was how he cajoles and encourages his teammates around the pitch has been absolutely phenomenal. He could be back. It looks as though he'll be back for the Brighton game potentially tomorrow. How badly do they need him back now to resettle the ship a little bit?
Well, if you factor in as well, no Van Dijk, and I don't just mean Van Dijk from a playing point of view. I mean, obviously, the fact that, you know, he organised the back four, Van Dijk. He organised everybody around him and obviously influenced the team in all sorts of different areas. They don't have that. I think Joel Matip is he's a good player, Joel Matip, but he's not a talker. So, you know, Fabinho alongside him is not a talker. So it's even more prevalent now for Henderson to take over in terms of the captain's role again. And I think a little bit as well, I think that's why Milner played against Leicester City at the weekend. A, for the experience, but also for the fact that, you know, he's got one or two players alongside him who haven't played in those positions. And he was also trying to talk them through it. And the more the merrier, basically. But the thing about it, especially if you're a Henderson, you probably say 50% of the game he's facing the play, so we can see what's happening. So for him, not only is it a really important position from a playing point of view, but also from an organisational point of view as well.
Let's talk about Chelsea against Tottenham at the weekend, Mark. Mm. It feels as if this is one of the most important games of the season so far, if not the most important season, because I guess you got the sense with Liverpool against Manchester City recently that either team could bounce back from a win. But it really feels that if Chelsea or Spurs, if there is to be a winner in this game, it will really rubber stamp them as title contenders this season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're looking at it and we're thinking, OK, you know, Spurs fantastically organised defensively, and they've got Kane and Son, who are absolutely brilliant at the moment. And Chelsea, who are, you know, the Zaitz fella and the two German boys as well, they're on fire, they're lively, they're quick, they're direct, they're scoring goals. Chelsea aren't great at the back. It's kind of, you look at it, and I think you're absolutely right. If one of the teams wins, they're probably suddenly starting to think to themselves, we have now got a real chance in terms of this league, to look forward, etc. But it's an interesting one, because you always feel with Jose, because it's Frank Lampard and because he had him for so long, you always feel with Jose that he will try and get one over on Lampard, whether it's the team that he selects, or whether that he makes one or two subtle changes and does something that Chelsea don't really expect Tottenham to do. So that'll be interesting. Excuse me, but I still think with Chelsea that they've got a defence that will concede goals. And when push comes to shove, I think that's the great worry. And with Tottenham as well, yes, they've done extremely well. Yes, we know it's Mourinho. We know what he can do. But, you know, you lose Harry Kane out of that side, and they're nothing like, they're probably 25, 30% down. And you never want somebody to get injured. But Harry Kane seems to get injured every single year, where he's out for, like, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 weeks. And I think that would really hurt Tottenham. But interesting game, certainly, and there's a little bit, I think, they don't like each other, which I always like watching games where the two teams don't like each other, because there's just a little bit more of an edge to the match.
It's interesting that you mentioned Chelsea's defence there. I was under the impression that they've got a lot better. They've conceded only one goal in the last four games, I think, in the Premier League. You still obviously have concerns about how long that can last.
Well, against the top teams, excuse me, so, you know, I mean, the Sheffield United and the Newcastles of this world, You know, they're obviously Premier League teams, but when you look at them, I mean, Chelsea completely unhinged Sheffield United, and Sheffield United didn't really kind of throw a punch at them that day at Stamford Bridge. And Newcastle was so kind of negative as well last, I think it was last Saturday lunchtime, wasn't it? So, and it, you know, teams haven't really put Chelsea under pressure. You could argue that, you know, because Chelsea have been so good going forward that, you know, the ball's generally been in the opposition half, but you just know when they play the top teams. I mean, that's why the fixture is so interesting, because if Tottenham come and play well, and then we'll have a much better idea that if Chelsea actually going forward can be good or better defensively.
Have you seen anything new from Jose Mourinho, the man or the manager of the season, to suggest that actually when things tend to go stale for him at previous clubs, that actually he is going to avoid that for quite some time here in his current gig?
you never know with Jose, because we know it's never his fault. He never picks the wrong team, he never makes the wrong substitutions, and it's always the referee or whatever. But listen, that's the way that he operates. And you know, there's one thing about Jose, he's privately actually is a completely different character, and it's probably some stuff that, you know, the majority of people don't know about or don't even see. I just think with Tottenham, yeah, they're a good side. Are they as good as Liverpool on the day? Are they as good as Man City on the day? And I would say no. But I would think, you know, that they're certainly better than Manchester United at the moment. They're probably, for me, the third best team in the league. Now, don't forget, I don't know how many years ago it was, and it feels like an eternity. Leicester City won the league when nobody thought that they could. Well, certainly nobody thought that they could up until about January, February. So, you know, they've very much got a chance, Tottenham, but I'm kind of waiting a little bit to say that they can actually win it, because just the Kane problem. If he plays all the season, I think they've got a good chance. But if he misses a chunk, which he has done consistently every single season, then I don't think they have a chance.
And it's a very tough run of fixtures as well, Mark, that if they manage to get to the other side of Christmas and still be in this position, they're in a really good chance as well with a fully fit squad, if that's how they're going to be set up. Yeah, just on Manchester United then, a sort of half Jose question, half Manchester United question. Is Jose's current form at Spurs a little bit of vindication for, you know, complaining about everybody but himself at Manchester United, that perhaps the structures at the club and the players that he had at Manchester United, maybe Jose was right all along, that maybe he didn't have the best opportunity to take Manchester United back to a title winning level?
Yeah, I think he's got an argument. Also, I saw this. I'm not a big person on stats, and it doesn't keep me up at night reading them. But I saw the stat the other day. Since Fergie obviously finished in his job, Man United has spent £1 billion on players, which, when you think about it, is absolutely mad. And you may or may not know, but David Moyes is one of my best friends, and I mean, he's got all sorts of stories from his time there. But I think one thing about Manchester United, and obviously people put Ole Gunnar Solskjaer under speculation every single time he loses a game or draws a game, but it's the problem for me is Edward Woodward, who was obviously on the books at Man United, and he did basically got all the sponsorship in, got made loads of money for the American owners, and they absolutely love him. And then he sort of got the job in terms of, you know, being in charge of the football side, in terms of transfers in and out, not so much selecting them, but doing the negotiations, etc. I think that's where Manchester United's problem is. And I don't understand why somebody, excuse me, at the club doesn't say, well, hold on, let's put Edward Woodward back in the job that he did and did it very, very well. And let's actually get in a director of football, whatever particular title you want to call somebody, somebody who has kind of full reign in terms of, you know, helping the manager, finding in players all across Europe, all across the world. And I think that's the problem with Manchester United. I really do think that in the transfer window, they've been kind of reactive, and they've reacted to things. And I mean, look at all that stuff about Jordan Sancho in the summer. And we kept hearing that, oh, Manchester United have agreed a deal with the player himself, which actually means they've agreed a deal with his agent. But they've never agreed a deal with the club. And the club are sat there laughing, thinking, really? So he's going to Man United, is he? Well, nobody's rung us. And straight away, if you then try to negotiate with Dortmund, Dortmund say, well, hold on, you've been saying you've agreed, all the money with Jordan Sancho to come to Man United. He doesn't go without our permission. Consequently, we want another 20 million now. So that's the kind of problem that they're having. And Manchester United had a guy called David Gill. You probably remember when Fergie was there, and that was his job, and he was brilliant at it. Absolutely outstanding. And you just heard about Manchester United signing a player on the day that he signed a player. You didn't hear all this speculation in the newspaper day in, day out. And I think that in many ways, is their biggest problem and will remain to be so. It's kind of, oh, we need a new player, let's go and buy whoever. And there just doesn't seem to be any great strategy. There doesn't seem to be, okay, now where do we want to be in 12 months? Where do we want to be in 24 months? And where do we want to be in 3 years? So they've been a little bit lucky that players have come through the system, Greenwood, Rashford, etc. So I just think with Manchester United, I think this is just going to go on and on. This is, you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer loses a couple of games and everyone's saying, oh, he gets sacked next week and then he wins a couple and he's fine. But that should not be the way that Manchester United operate.
Can I ask you about on-field strategy then? Because it looked against Istanbul Basaksehir here that they'd stumbled upon something here with Van de Beek and Fernandes playing, but also with Cavani, Rashford, Martial starting as well, an attacking lineup. But it looked good, Mark. Do you stick with that now for the next few weeks?
Well, yeah. Why wouldn't you? Because the problem is, you know, they keep changing the team every week. You know, all these former managers, obviously I go back to Shankly because, I mean, I never played for him, but, you know, every time at Liverpool when somebody would say to him, you know, what's the team at the weekend, he'd say, I picked my best team in every single game. And the reason he did that was because he said, if you lose, then you're thinking, oh, maybe I've got a problem, maybe in that best team I've got one or two things wrong over players. He said, but if you play a team where you leave a couple of your best players out and you lose, why would you do that? And I'm a bit like that with Manchester United, which is, you know, they win a game and very, very occasionally he will keep the same team. And, you know, lots of managers now, we have this thing with the five subs and one thing another, and they send the players, you know, get tired and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, but everybody's players get tired. Basically, you know, I can't tell Solskjaer how he should go about his job, but I would have thought, pick your best team every week. And, you know, if it doesn't work, you can change three anyway in the game. And I just think that's their biggest problem. And I know it's difficult because it's Manchester United, one of the world's most famous clubs, etc. And they are expected to win this, win that, win whatever. But I think, as we know, when we look at it, it goes almost from one week to the next. You know, is he getting sacked? Is he staying? I mean, he's a lovely, lovely bloke. But you just deal with him. It's also a little bit of kind of, he doesn't get any help from upstairs for me. He might get help saying, here's another 50 million, go and buy somebody, but there's no master plan. I think therein lies the problem.
Yeah. All right, Laura. Thanks a million. Enjoy the football over the weekend.
Will do.
Don't miss a second of the action. Subscribe now to the OTB AM podcast to get it every weekday morning in your podcast feed from 10 a.m.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.